You're listening to Wake Up Tucson. This podcast is a Bustos Media production on The Voice. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Seven oh seven in the morning. You're on Wake Up Tucson, 10:30 The Voice, local news and talk. Coming off an amazingly fun and successful trivia night at Tucson Games and Gadgets Short Rest Tavern. It was so amazing to see all of you guys, and thanks to Mark Cadow and the crew. They were an amazing host. Mark was a great trivia master, and we got to see a Mandalorian bounty hunter that walked by and real deal. That was LARPing for you almost there. That was close. That was Star Wars LARPing right there.
Absolutely.
You wanted it. You were wearing your wizard's robes, and it was quite amazing. So let's get to David Schweikert, U.S. Congressperson. David, good morning.
Congressperson. Okay.
We're in Tucson, man.
Tucson is taken. Yeah, you're right. I was about to make a Tucson joke and then realized that's just not fair.
So because we did trivia last night, I'm going to ask Matt a David Schweikert trivia question. What high school did David Schweikert graduate from?
I hope I'm right, David. Saguaro.
Oh! Yeah, spelled the right way.
Amen. Amen, David. Amen.
Been we put the sag in the Saguaro.
It was always fun sort of growing up because back when I was in high school, the Tucson Saguaro really had some great sports teams.
Yeah.
And I always remember being sort of jealous saying, well, darn it, you know, the other Saguaro down there is doing great and ours, well, we suck.
David graduated from Scum Devil University, okay? What is his Bachelor of Science degree in?
Accounting. Business finance.
He's pretty close.
Yeah, it was finance and real estate.
See, look at you. You have the same degree?
Finance, real estate, and law. Cal Poly, baby.
All
Cal Poly Pomona.
Woo!
You bet.
I love
it. Mystery Bob.
I love it. I love it. Well, David, we're going to do Schweikert. We're going to start doing Schweikert trivia the whole time.
Cal Poly actually has some excellent professors. So,
and it says you you spent some time at as a fighting artichoke. Is this true? At Scottsdale Community College. Is this true?
Yeah, I got to be. I was very blessed. They let me take my senior year of high school. They let me start my math classes over at the community college.
Wow! Look at you. I love it. I got one last question for you about David Schweikert's personal life. The first date of you and Joyce, where was it?
Hello.
Hi, David Schweikert. Welcome to Wake Up Tucson.
Oh, there you disappeared for a moment. I thought you guys had gotten rid of the 1940s equipment.
Oh, no. We remember, it rained the last week. We're in trouble. We get rain on our
monsoons last night.
You got some?
No, I was hoping you did.
We had a little off to the northeast, but nothing too bad. My last trivia question for everyone, for Dave, you can tell us, where was the first date for you and Joyce? Where'd you guys go? I did it again? Radio doesn't want me to ask this question. David Schweikert, what the hell happened?
You're coming and going. Do you want me to redial in?
Matt, what do you want to do here, man? What do you think? It's got to be us.
Yeah. What is? He's calling back.
Okay. Oh my God. What the hell is going on here? I got to go to San Diego and get the more durables. Holy crap! Is he on now? Hold on. Every time I ask this question about Dave's first date with Joyce,
the phone goes out when you ask that question.
So then just do it again.
So, hang on a second. He's not back yet.
That's okay. Maybe it really was him.
I think it's the Maricopa County phone lines. Let's pin it on Maricopa County.
I think it's Stephen Richards' problem. He did it.
Well,
sorry.
Don't ask Shelby about that.
Well, hi everyone. Wake Up Tucson.
After he disparaged our phone lines and 1940s equipment. Who's not calling?
This is what happens when you do the consumer cellular for your phone. We'll bring on Windows for it. Well, he'll replace the congressman. Let's go to U.S. Congressman Windows XP on line 4. Windows, what's up?
Good morning. Don't get ahead of yourself, Chris. Give me time. So good morning, my oven mitt friend.
Good morning. You know what's funny?
Oh, let me turn you off. I had you on the radio, too. I love listening to you on my Android. It's the best signal. It's all. Hey, what are you using? Two Dixie cups and a string with the esteemed congressman? What's going on here?
I don't know.
The Secret Service was in charge of his phone line. And
Oh, Lord. Well, it could be a special election.
Okay, hold on. This is really good. So David's texting me right now.
Oh, Lord.
I got to give him another number here.
Lord in
so,
heaven.
Matt, you're going to love this, Matt.
Are you using Cricket? Are you using Cricket, Chris?
So check this out. Matt, you're going to love. He goes, I got a recording that says the person you're trying to reach is not accepting calls.
Uh-oh, Cheatham might be involved.
Now, Chris, do you have a question for the congressman?
Yeah.
All right, hold on.
First came out here.
Hold on. Let's bring him on, and then you can ask David.
All right,
David, welcome back. All right, you're on with our listener, Chris. He has a business where he cleans windows of businesses in the city of Tucson. He's our eyes and ears, risking his life every day walking through the streets of Tucson. So.
And I bet you, Chris, because he sees more what's really going on in the city than almost anyone.
Correct.
Absolutely correct.
Thank you, Congressman. And actually, I'd asked you about passing a budget before, maybe a year or two ago. I've actually talked to you before.
What's your question for David?
It's pertaining to Saguaro. When I first came out here in 2002, I met a gentleman who went there, and he had told me that Rodney Peek attended that high school.
That was the Tucson one.
Rodney Peek was.
You're Maricopa.
Yes.
Oh.
Sorry, buddy.
And then I was going to ask him.
Yeah. No, but David Spade was 2 years behind me at Saguaro High School, Scottsdale.
That's true. David Spade did go, and he was a fighting artichoke.
Yeah.
He literally went to high school with Joe Dirt.
He did go.
That's awesome.
Am I the only one that saw that movie and found it horribly depressing?
Yes, Miller's in that movie.
It's true.
He's abusive, too. All right, Congressman, God bless you. And watch your back in D.C. because it's hard to tell friend from foe right now.
So.
That's actually what Chris just said is brilliant. Can I give you an example?
Yes, please.
What Chris just said. So last week, Congress failed to pass the legislative appropriation branch budget by 10 votes. A number of those 10 Republicans who said they wouldn't vote for it, do you know their number one reason?
Why is that?
No, you're supposed to guess.
Oh, no. Matt, do you have a guess for those congressmen?
The slope of the floor inside the house was too steep, and they found it dangerous.
You know, you're actually brilliant, but no. There wasn't a COLA packed into it. They had a number of Republican members vote no on the legislative branch appropriation, which is a constitutional obligation. Remember, it's like one of those nice little articles in the Constitution that, you know, your Article 1. Because their salaries weren't going to go up because the salaries have been frozen for like 15, 20 years. And they voted. And then some of these are the very same people who will run around and tell you how alter MAG and how conservative they are.
Wow.
But what Chris was sort of saying is you get people, it's get on television, get on radio, sound outraged.
Yep.
And yet, are terrified to explain the real cause of the debt and deficits and the math and how brutal the solutions really are. You know, get rid of foreign aid. That balances the budget. It takes care of, what, 7-8 days of borrowing? You know, and you and I have done this a dozen times, how frustrated I am. we've got too many, particularly Democrats, but I have a handful of my Republicans that lie about the math, and the math will win.
Yep. Well, and the thing is, you have a either misled or ignorant population. Some of them have no intellectual curiosity for such things.
I'm going to stick with sort of the misled. I mean, let's be honest. The political class has lied for decades. Democrats say, we just tax rich people more. And then you show saying, okay, almost all their taxes, when you adjust them for their economic effects, produce about 1.5% of GDP in new taxes. Our cuts, which we should do, are about 1% of GDP. So you got a whole 2.5%. And this year we're borrowing, 7% of the entire economy. and there's the fraud. You try to explain over and over and over and over, every dime of defense is on borrowed money. Every dime of non-defense, the stuff we get to vote on. So every dime a member of Congress votes on is borrowed. You know, foreign aid, your park service, the, you know, FBI, everything's on borrowed money. And maybe a quarter of Medicare.
Yep.
And then you explain. So when people say, I'm going to run for Congress and I'm going to balance the budget in the first year. Sure, I can do it. You just get rid of most of the government. Actually, all the government, and your earned entitlements would have to get a haircut, too. And it's demographics. You know, your government is an insurance company with an army.
Right.
And that's where the money goes.
It's one of your greatest lines. All right, let's go to break. David, when I come back with our last segment, and hopefully all the phones will be better, I want you to tell people what do you hope to hear out of President Trump tonight at the RNC?
Brilliant.
In relation to how does it affect not just the presidential race, but down ticket also, okay?
Maybe one of the most important speeches in modern history.
I totally agree with you. All right, David Schweikert, he'll be right back in a few minutes. We're doing the presidential election year playlist, starting with 1960, era Marilyn. All right, we're doing the 1960 playlist. We're doing presidential election years. Let's go right to David Schweikert. He's got about 4.5 minutes to tell us what tone he thinks President Trump should hit tonight, not only to secure a presidency win, but also help the down ticket. David Schweikert, the floor is yours.
It's actually one of the Trump pollsters and political strategists in sort of an off conversation a day and a half ago, was saying it's almost unheard of for a president who has 100% name ID, who's absolutely defined in people's minds of how they think about him, to get a reintroduction chance.
Right.
We've got to be brutally honest. So you've seen the numbers on particularly suburban females, and almost how hostile they have voted in the past towards President Trump. Is this a chance to sort of retell the story that, you know, as Republicans and as a president, we care about your prosperity, we care about your safety, we care about your future. And in many ways, it's the same story the president has said since 2016, but it's an opportunity to do it in a way where he can reintroduce himself to that population that tuned out because they've just had this barrage of hate, you know, from the media thrown at him. I mean, how often do you, as a politician, get a chance to reintroduce yourself?
So, you know, he's done something that a lot of MAGA purity people wouldn't expect, which is make the tent bigger for the Republican and who's spoken at this party at the convention between the Amber Rose lady and the guy from the Teamsters, right?
Yeah, look, and none of those things are classically conservative; they're populist.
Yep.
But right now, that type of populism is an introduction to people who don't hear our story.
Yep.
In this case, look, I'm always worried about populism being dangerous to the Constitution, but right now that sort of big tent may actually be brilliant.
Yep. So What does he need to say tonight? What would be beneficial out of his mouth today?
I may know a little more about some of this than I'm supposed to. First is a thank you. Thank you for everyone who prayed. A heartfelt comment for, you know, the gentleman who lost his life. That demonstration of being grateful to be able to stay in the fight to do good things and the heartbreak of someone losing their life. And then the ability to say, and this allows me to double down my efforts to make your life better.
Yeah.
Remember, most people actually vote themselves. They vote their personal pocketbook. They vote their anxieties. They vote their for their kids. They vote for their retirement, their future. Talk to people's wants and needs.
I love it. Well, I hope he does it. I don't really watch a lot of these things from the conventions. After a while, they start sounding the same. But I'm definitely going to be tuning in tonight and see what he does.
And one of the president's most difficult things are some of the people that love him are saying things that aren't his positions. And we got to get some of our brothers and sisters out there to be more disciplined in their message.
Just real quick, in 40 seconds or less, we have, what's a position that they say is his position but really isn't?
Well, in some ways it's just the opposite. Like the president has talked about, foreigners who get university degrees in America, should we keep them here? And it's almost like some of my MAGA friends didn't actually hear the president's comments on talent-based those sorts of things.
So
the ability to listen to what the actual policies are.
Thanks, buddy. Great. Sorry I had phone problems, but thank you.
All right, thanks. Bye now.
Jim Malcolm, Heritage Foundation, coming up next. All right, 7:34 in the morning. You're on Wake Up Tucson. We're playing them tunes from, we're going to do presidential election years, first day today, starting with 1960. I'm not going to tell you what's the next year. Could be, it's not 1963 or 65, just to let everyone know. If you missed David Schweikert's great take on what tone President Trump should hit tonight at the RNC, and you missed it, kvy.com. Matt will have that up in about a half hour this hour. That's how good this man is, efficiency expert. Let's go right to the phones. John Malcolm from the Heritage Foundation, who I think has more titles since the last time we talked to John. Let's see.
I probably do.
Vice President, Institute of Constitutional Government, Director of the Mies Center and the Simon Center. God, you guys got a lot of damn stuff.
That got added. Yeah.
And a Gilbertson Lindbergh Zoidberg senior legal fellow. My God. How big's your business card?
Yeah, it's pretty big. More titles, less power.
All right, my friend. Welcome back to the show.
Good to be with you.
Trump classified documents case rightfully tossed out for now. So let's start off. Let's remind everyone. Let's set this thing up, and then let's talk about the judge's decision last week.
Sure. So this was the indictment that Special Counsel Jack Smith brought down in Florida, claiming that Donald Trump and two other defendants, Walt Nauta and Carlos de Oliveira, had violated the Espionage Act by taking classified documents down to Mar-a-Lago. And then after rejecting government subpoenas, or saying actually that he had complied with government subpoenas and turned over all of the classified documents, he was also charged with obstructing justice for not having turned those documents back over to the government. And Judge Cannon, Eileen Cannon, who is a Trump appointee, she just issued a 93-page opinion dismissing the indictment, not on the basis of the merits of the indictment. She didn't consider those at all, but by saying that Jack Smith's appointment as a special counsel violated the Constitution. She said that he clearly violated, in her opinion, in one way, and probably violated it in two other ways. I would also point out that Jack Smith is the same special counsel who was also prosecuting the, quote-unquote, January 6th case in federal court in Washington, D.C. So what he ended up saying was, look, the Appointments Clause of the Constitution says that you can, the president can nominate people that have to be confirmed by the Senate, or in some cases, a cabinet secretary, like, you know, the attorney general can appoint an inferior officer to an office that is established by law. That's the key phrase.
Right.
And what Judge Cannon said was, you know, we used to have an independent counsel law in this country that was pursuant to a statute. But that law was allowed to lapse in 1999. It was not renewed. And Congress has never, by law, established an office of special counsel. And therefore, since an office of special counsel was never created, any appointment to that office violates the Appointments Clause. She also said that he probably violated the Appointments Clause in another way, which is that his the amount of activities or power that he's been given and the limited oversight over him means that he's probably a principal officer and not an inferior officer. The reason that's significant is because inferior officers can be appointed by cabinet heads. Principal officers have to be nominated by the president and confirmed by the Senate. Jack Smith was neither. Jack Smith was a private citizen outside of the Department of Justice when he was plucked by Merrick Garland and put into that position. She also said he probably violated the Appropriations Clause because the money that he has been spending, $10 million and counting, came out of a pot that can only be used by properly designated officials. Since he wasn't, the money he has been spending violates the Appropriations Clause.
So why did they pick Jack Smith to begin with?
Well, Jack Smith used to be at the Justice Department. He was the head of the Public Integrity Section for a long time. You know, he prosecuted.
Thank God.
He prosecuted former Virginia Governor Bob McDonnell. He prosecuted former North Carolina Senator and Vice Presidential nominee John Edwards. So he's got a lot of prosecutorial experience. He was, when he was plucked by Merrick Garland, working on international war crimes at The Hague. But one thing he was not, he was never nominated by President Trump or President Biden, and he was never confirmed by the Senate. So there's a contrast, right? So David Weiss, the U.S. attorney who was the special counsel who was prosecuting Hunter Biden, he is the sitting U.S. attorney in Delaware. He was nominated and confirmed by the Senate. John Durham, when he was looking into all the Russia stuff, he was the sitting U.S. attorney in Connecticut. He had been nominated by the president and confirmed by the Senate. Others, though, have not been. Rob Herr, for instance, who just looked into the Biden classified documents matter, used to be a U.S. attorney in Maryland, but he was then a private citizen, a partner in a law firm. And there is a history, which Judge Cannon discusses, of sometimes people being appointed who have been U.S. attorneys like Patrick Fitzgerald, and other times in which they weren't, like Lawrence Walsh, who looked into Iran-Contra. And she discusses that history and says, look, people have sort of assumed that this is okay. Nobody has ever squarely raised this argument, and therefore I have to take it seriously and do an analysis. I will point out that this argument was raised once before in a challenge to Bob Mueller's appointment as a special counsel. That challenge was rejected by the trial judge in Washington, D.C., and the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals affirmed that ruling. So this issue has been settled in the D.C. Circuit, but it is very much a live issue in the 11th Circuit where Judge Cannon sits, and we will see what the 11th Circuit has to say, because Jack Smith has already said it's going to appeal this.
Just to go off left field, so Ken Starr on the Clinton thing, was he an appropriate independent counsel, or was he kind of in that same situation as this?
No, he wasn't in that same situation because he was appointed, the last one appointed, under the independent counsel law. That was a statute. So that the office of the independent counsel was an office that had been established by law, specifically the Ethics in Government Act, which is the independent counsel law. But that law no longer is on the books, and Jack Smith was not appointed pursuant to that law.
Let's go to my friend Matt. He's got a question for you.
So this is all fascinating. I really hadn't heard this, all the steps to get to this point.
Mm-hmm.
Does this speak to sloppiness by Merrick Garland, that knowing that this was challenged in the Mueller case, that somebody didn't kind of legislatively go around and fix the 1999 expiration of the law before they did this again? I mean,
well,
because as you say, Merrick Garland And in effect, the Biden administration has unleashed a huge expenditure of resources and time and energy on this when they knew possibly it had been challenged before. And there was, I would think, because of the Mueller thing, they would have known this 1999 expiration.
Well, the independent counsel law lapsed and wasn't renewed back in 1999 because it used to be used primarily to go after Republican presidents. But this time it was used by, you know, with Ken Starr to go after Bill Clinton. So after both sides had their ox scored, they decided enough of independent counsel. So they just didn't renew the law, and everybody knew that. There have been special counsels going back to the Watergate era. So you had Archibald Cox and Leon Jaworski, and I think there was just sort of an assumption that because there was this rich history of special counsels being appointed, not as independent counsels, but as special counsels, that it was probably okay. And again, the D.C. Circuit had rejected this argument. But it was actually flagged a couple of weeks ago when the Supreme Court issued the presidential immunities case. There was a concurrence by Justice Clarence Thomas. He at oral argument had asked whether Jack Smith was properly appointed. And he wrote a special concurrence that said, doesn't look to me as if he was properly appointed. Looks to me as if his appointment violates the appointments clause. I hope this issue gets raised and resolved. By that point already, you know, Judge Cannon was considering the issue, but it was before her opinion had come out. No other justices joined Clarence Thomas's concurrence. That's neither here nor there. Look, the answer to your question is that I think they just assumed that this practice is going to be okay and upheld. But Merrick Garland certainly could have and still could say, you know what, we're going to get rid of Jack Smith, and I'm going to designate one of the 93 current U.S. attorneys who have
he didn't have enough selection.
Nominated and confirmed, and that person will be a special counsel. And then the constitutional argument goes away.
Has anyone ever asked Merrick why Jack Smith publicly?
No, although, you know, in the same way that Bob Mueller was appointed, I think certainly in Democratic circles, he had a very good reputation. He's a zealous prosecutor. He certainly has gone after high-profile officials before, former governors, former senators. He's known as being a thorough guy, and you know, that's why they picked him. Now, mind you, he has a lot of success, no question about it. His conviction of Bob McDonnell, the former governor of Virginia, was overturned, I believe it was 9-0, by the U.S. Supreme Court. And his prosecution of John Edwards went to a jury. They acquitted him of some charges, couldn't reach a verdict with respect to the other charges, and then the Justice Department dropped the matter. So he didn't obtain a conviction in that case either.
We're talking to John Malcolm from the Heritage Foundation. He runs 4 to 7 centers somewhere in the Washington, D.C. area. Question from a listener. In that vein, why didn't Fannie Willis appoint a staffer in Georgia?
Well, Fannie Willis is, you know, she is the district attorney in Fulton County. I don't know. I mean, she obviously has people in her office working on this case, at least unless she's disqualified, which could happen. I mean, she's the issue of her disqualification is currently before the Georgia Court of Appeals. She appointed two people in whom she had faith. One of them is this guy I happen to know. I used to be a federal prosecutor down in Atlanta, a guy named John Floyd. John Floyd, partner at a big law firm, is an expert on the Racketeering Act and, you know, the major charges against the defendants in that case is for violations of Georgia's RICO law. And then she appointed this guy who, you know, ended up being her paramour, Nathan Wade. They, of course, are state officials, so they're not subject to, gotcha, you know, the appointments clause, which only applies to federal officials. She can appoint who she wants so long as it's approved by the, you know, Fulton County Commission. There's questions as to whether they did that, but the constitutional issue is not there.
Tell me about the merits of the case itself that Jack Smith brought against President Trump. So we understand 93 pages from Judge Cannon violating everything you talked about, but on the merits of the case of what he was trying to do, what's your opinion on the validity of such charges?
Well, you have to break those charges down into two different issues, and I'm not a huge expert on one of these issues, which is the crux of the matter. So the allegation was he took classified information. And President Trump has admitted that he did not declassify these documents while he was president. He took classified information and he put it in an unsecure setting. And certainly as a former president, he is not entitled to possess these classified documents. That's the government's position. What President Trump has said is, look, there's a statute called the Presidential Records Act that allows me to take some of these records. I'm supposed to negotiate how to protect them and with the National Archives. I was in the process of doing all of that. Your statement that I can't take classified documents with me is very much up in the air. I think I can under the Presidential Records Act. This was really an administrative internal matter that was being handled that way and should have continued to be handled that way. So I don't know that much about the Presidential Records Act. I do know a little bit about the Espionage Act, but I don't know enough about all of the details of the Presidential Records Act to say much about the merits of that. The other, you know, the other charge is more straightforward, which is that he received a subpoena, grand jury subpoena, saying turn over the documents. He, you know, was a private citizen at that point, and not only did he not turn over the documents, but it is alleged that he induced his attorneys to falsely swear that he had complied with the subpoena and turned over all of the documents. And it is alleged that he ordered his two co-defendants to take all of these documents out of a storage facility at Mar-a-Lago and move them around so that the government wouldn't find them and his own lawyers would not find them because he didn't want those documents to be turned over to the government. I don't know about the factual allegations, but that is a more straightforward charge.
So on the appeal of this, right?
Right.
So they're appealing that Judge Cannon's decision on Jack Smith is incorrect?
That's right. They will argue that his appointment to special counsel was perfectly constitutional, that it complied with the law. Merrick Garland, when he appointed Jack Smith, cited, I think it was five or six different regulations that he believed justified the appointment under law. She did, I think, a very thorough job of going through each of those regulations and discussing their text and where they appear in terms of the laws that implemented those regulations to say that she did not think that justified the appointment of a special counsel. She said that these were very vague laws that were really taken out of context. She cited from an opinion by the late Justice Scalia that Congress doesn't hide elephants in mouse holes and that Jack Smith's reading was just too far-fetched. She acknowledged that there was a rich history of appointing special counsels, but said, you know, that issue was never argued or briefed before the Supreme Court, and that the only other opinion that really considered it, which is the D.C. Circuit, was a very poorly reasoned opinion, and she was going to decline to follow it.
So my last question, and I'll paraphrase from my cousin Vinny, does the appeal hold water, as we like to say?
Well, any citation to my cousin Vinny is great. So I don't know what the Utes will say when they go up to the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals. Nor do I know. I don't think that Judge Chamberlain Howell is on the 11th Circuit. But look, it's a very, very serious issue. It's somewhat controversial, and it's an important issue. And so I think that if the 11th Circuit, regardless of what the 11th Circuit does, I think that the Supreme Court will ultimately weigh in. And certainly if the 11th Circuit affirms her opinion and there's a circuit split, the Supreme Court will take it up. There is one issue that's hanging out there, which is if Donald Trump is reelected as president, I assume that one of the first things on day one, as you like to say, on day one, he will fire Jack Smith and he will order these cases be dismissed. So maybe the issue gets dropped at that point. But it's a very serious constitutional issue. And ultimately, if the case still survives, I think will be resolved by the Supreme Court.
All right. John Malcolm, great job today. Really good. And we were definitely much smarter after listening to you. So well played. And please tell Kristen that I don't want you on the show again until you have another center under your belt. Okay.
I'll be sure to pass that along.
Thanks, bye-bye. My friend. Have a good weekend. John Malcolm, Heritage Foundation. That guy's good.
That was fascinating.
Fascinating. You're on Wake Up Tucson. We're playing the tunes 1960. Ray Charles, I'm going to... John Malcolm, great job from the 14 centers at the Heritage Foundation. The Let's see what else. Tomorrow is All Garlic Day. You got two greasy guineas between me and CJ Ham will be here.
You had me at garlic.
CJ is going to make a garlic dish, and then Linda from the Triangle Tea Guest Ranch is going to bring is talking and bringing garlic for Food Friday.
I'm going to be a very, very happy man tomorrow.
So if I could find, where do I find an elephant garlic? You know, the biggins. Maybe Sprouts? Maybe.
Maybe.
I want to replicate that great dish at Richardson's up in Phoenix,
mm-hmm.
where they slow roast elephant garlic, which are just basically big cloves of garlic.
Sure.
And they slow roast it until it becomes like butter.
This is turning into food porn right here.
It is. Yeah. And then what they do is they throw some variety of shredded queso mm-hmm. on top.
Oh, dear Lord.
And then they put it under the broiler. And then they serve it with toast points, and you just basically spread that onto your on your toast points.
Yeah.
And have that with a glass of vino,
mm-hmm.
you know, a nice glass of Chianti, as Dr. Lecter would say.
You doctor.
So, Grover moved on us again.
You've been teasing me all week. And
I know.
Still.
It's just,
where are we going?
He's moving. You know what happened is, like, he's doing, like, with different state delegations and things like that uh-huh. at the convention, and we okay. just had to move him. So.
Well, we will look forward to him. We always love when Grover's on.
When we come back, we will play the Carrie Lake interview with the gentleman from Channel 12 News in Phoenix.
Mark Curtis.
And we'll see if you think Carrie Lake is ready for prime time in a statewide race if she unfortunately somehow beats Mark Lamb. And we'll talk about how Mark Lamb she offered a job to Mark Lamb, confirmed by Mark Lamb, to drop out of the race, where she, of course, clutched her pearls and got on the giant soapbox of ever going, "Oh, you can't do that," when you can't ask me to leave a race. You're on Wake Up Tucson. Oh, whoa, calm down, Donald, calm down. Wake Up Tucson, 10:30 The Voice, local news and talk.